I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll discuss various facets of the animal network in Manatee County, including its history and mission. With its president, Lori Crawford, the organization also is holding a big dog event this Saturday, the 14th annual Canine Christmas Festival. First, though, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. Handpicked with this event in mind, it's the Eels with Christmas is Going to the Dogs here on Talking Animals.
Get off your sled and go to bed. Don't you ever tire. Throw a bone, I'm finally home. Curled up by the fire. Snow is falling from the sky like ashes from an urn. Sweet dreams, my little one. Now it's my turn. Well, Christmas is going to the dogs. We'd rather have two toys than you lot. And things aren't looking very good, it's true. So I'll just lay here and chew. When I sleep, I like to dream of rabbits in the snow, jumping right into my jaws from their rabbit hole. Take one home and set him down right next to your shoes. Wake up to a big surprise, my gift to you. And Christmas is going to the dogs. Rather have two toys than you lot. And things aren't looking very good, it's true. So I'll just lay here and chew.
That was the Eels with Christmas is Going to the Dogs, an animal tune of sorts, and reference the Animal Network's Canine Christmas Festival Saturday. Ease us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be hearing from today's guest, Lori Crawford, president of the Animal Network, a Manatee County organization that's primarily a lobbying group, but wears a number of other hats, including presenting this Saturday's Canine Christmas Festival and more. We'll discuss all this presently with Lori Crawford here on Talking Animals. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the Comedy Corner. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Taming Me, a memoir of a clever island cat, booked by our recent guest, Kathy Unruh. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcements segment, a look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. First, you might well expect that we would have another update on Bill and Lou, those the oxen at Green Mountain College that we've been reporting on the last few weeks, and this show was recorded in my absence last week, so I don't have an update. I'm fingers crossed, of course, that all is still well with Bill and Lou. So we will update you next week on the show. On their fate, but so far, at least, protests and emails and calls and all kinds of things have, called off the, colleges' plan, you may have recall, to, slaughter these, oxen that have been in service to the college for, 10, 11 years, and then, serve the, proceeds to, as part of the, college's animal, dining, services. There's a Freudian slip. So anyway, we will, try to track it when we are back in town. And meant to get to this a show or two ago, really, notable, Los Angeles lawmakers recently voted in favor of an ordinance that will make L.A. the largest city in America to ban pet stores from selling dogs, cats, and rabbits obtained from commercial breeders. The ordinance, which the city council voted 12-2 to approve, targets puppy mills and is designed to cut down on the tens of thousands of animals euthanized each year in city shelters. Under the law, individuals will still be allowed to buy directly from breeders, and pet stores will be allowed to sell animals that come from shelters, humane societies, and registered rescue groups. Stores found to be selling animals from breeders may face misdemeanor charges and a first-time penalty of $250. Animal rights activists hailed LA's approval of the ban as a signal to other large cities to follow suit. Irvine, Hermosa Beach, and West Hollywood are among the more than 30 cities across the United States and Canada that have passed similar measures in recent years. According to Elizabeth Orlick, who has been leading the legislative effort on behalf of Best Friends Animal Society. LA's ban also sends a message, she said, to breeders who frequently cut corners to keep costs low at the expense of the animals. She said they're inbred, they're overbred, they're irresponsibly bred. Pet shop owners, meanwhile, complain the ordinance is misguided and unfair, just as making us suffer, said Candace Rowe, whose family's been selling dogs, including Yorkshire Terriers and English Bulldogs, at its Koreatown pet shop for 11 years. Rowe said her store, Olympic Pet Shop, buys nearly all of its dogs from local breeders who take good care of their animals. If we were getting puppy mill puppies that were sick, we wouldn't have stayed in business this long, she said. All right, hats off to those LA lawmakers. Kind of a odd and grim story. An animal trainer mauled to death in Billings, Montana, while cleaning the Montana pen of two 500-pound captive brown bears used for filmmaking, suffered extensive wounds to make it impossible to determine if he was conscious before the attack, authorities said Monday. There were no defensive wounds on the hands or arms of 24-year-old Benjamin Cloutier when his body was pulled from the pen Sunday, and he apparently had not used the bear spray he was carrying, said Dimitri Price, head trainer at Animals of Montana near Bozeman. As a result, Price speculated Cloutier might have fallen and hit his head before being killed. The local sheriff there confirmed the absence of defensive wounds and that the mace-like bear spray had not been used, but he said there was no way to prove Cloutier was unconscious when the attack began. Locally, and on a happier note, just want to remind you, we've mentioned this a handful of times on the show, that the Humane Society of Tampa Bay Animal Health Center, located 3809 North Armenia Avenue, is offering cat sterilizations for indoor-outdoor cats living in the 33610 zip code area, thanks to a grant from PetSmart Charities. That cat sterilization, let's just say, could not be a better deal. So residents living in 33610 area zip code can call 813-870-3304 to make an appointment for a free sterilization. Sorry. For their cats. The offer is effective immediately and is to remain open at least probably till September 2014 or until the funds from the grant are used up. And another reminder that we mentioned, I think, before, as of November, the Hillsborough County Animal Services shelter adoption hours have changed. They are open from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. So, convenient for your adopting pleasure, obviously. And, but as always, they are looking for, November volunteer signups. And, they're having a signup, in fact, tonight, 5:30 p.m. So you can find out more at hillsboroughcounty.org/animal services. From the AP, the Atlantic Columbus, Ohio, four owners of exotic animals in Ohio are suing the state's agriculture department and its director over a new law regulating dangerous wildlife, contending the restrictions threaten their First Amendment and property rights. The lawsuit was filed in Columbus federal court. It comes as the owners faced a Monday deadline, recent deadline, to register their animals with the state. The owner's attorney said Monday that the state has agreed not to enforce certain provisions of the law until there's a hearing on the lawsuit. Attorney Robert Owen said lawyers were still reviewing the agreement, but a court order detailing the arrangement was expected in the coming days. Under the law, owners who don't register could face a first-degree misdemeanor charge for a first offense and a fifth-degree felony for any subsequent offenses. And I think it's important periodically to report on animal hoarding. And the certainly falls within the purview of the show. You know, it's often a sort of a darker and puzzling practice. But an Aurora man, this is from the Chicago Tribune, an Aurora man who was living in his townhouse with more than 350 live birds and 120 dead ones, was charged with animal hoarding, according to the city. Davis Gravatis, 57, has been cited for companion animal hoarding, a Class B misdemeanor, according to Aurora Police. His residence was declared unfit for human habitation last month after a painting contractor alerted Aurora officials to the hundreds of birds flying around uncaged inside the home. City officials gained a court order to remove the birds, which were given to a non-profit bird group. The city said it is reviewing its options to bring the property into compliance. The charges against Gilbertus carry a maximum jail time of 6 months, along with probation and possible fines. All right, if we have time, we'll come back to some other news stories. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Jackie Cation with a piece called Animals on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
But the truly crazy people in Los Angeles are literally the animal people. And before I go into it, allow me to make an announcement. I love animals. I love them. People are animals. I love people. I love the tiny animals we have as pets. I love the larger ones we eat. I love all the animals. I'm like Dr. Doolittle up here. I freaking love the animals. My husband has an iguana. It's like petting a purse, but it's a perfectly nice animal. Very adorable lizard. And, but get this, when I was a kid, of course, if you had an old dog or a very ill cat, you sadly put the dog down, put the cat to sleep. It was very sad. But they would go to Happy Dog or Cat Heaven, and you would go to the pound to get a new... And it's a circle of life. It was very beautiful. That doesn't happen in crazy Los Angeles land, where people are like, oh no, the cat's only 17, we're going to get dialysis. Are ya? I have a friend of mine who has a cat that is 21 years old, and in addition to the plethora of other issues going on with this cat, it now has diabetes. And so she has to shoot it up twice a day. You know what that is? Time for a new cat. New cat twice a day? Why do you get a cat? So you don't have to do anything. That's why you get a cat. Because it poops in a box. $3,000 for diabetic cat medicine for this cat. You know what that is? That is 3,000 new cats. Because cats are free. And I have another friend of mine who has a dog, and the dog has to get a new hip, but it didn't work. And so the dog's still scooting around on a cart like Captain Pike. And I'm going to tell you something. It is a dog. It is not ever going to be Stephen Hawking. Not ever. It's not going to write the great American novel from the cart. It's not going to cure cancer from the cart. If it can't run, new dog. New dog! And people get mad at me in L.A., and they come up to me after shows, and they're like, you don't like animals. And I said, no, I don't like you. Because you're a jackass about your pet. You gotta let go, weirdo. And because what do you get with a cat or a dog? 15, 20 years. That's what you get. I didn't make that rule. If you would like more than that, turtle. Tiny turtle, hat, tutu, carried around your creepy Paris Hilton purse. You lift its head up. Adorable. Giant tortoise that could walk slowly around your backyard for 300 years and become a burden on your descendants. Turtle. Where I go to eat breakfast in LA, right next to my breakfast place, there is an animal eye care clinic. Kid you not. Animal Eye Care Clinic. I don't have insurance, but let's get Mittens some contacts. Better now or no? Better now or no?
All right. That was Jackie Cation with a piece called Animals, taken from her album, It's Never Going to Be Bread. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to hear from today's guest, Lori Crawford, the president of the Animal Network, the Manatee County-based lobbying group that does many other things, including producing this Saturday's Canine Christmas Festival. So in a conversation recorded last Wednesday, this is Lori Crawford on Talking Animals. Okay, let's welcome to Talking Animals, Lori Crawford. Good afternoon or good morning, Lori, depending on this is real time or recorded. How are you?
Good afternoon, Duncan. I'm really doing real well today.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals. And of course, we'll want to highlight this Saturday's extravaganza, including the attempt to set a world record, no less. But I really feel like we should spend at least, you know, some time talking about the Animal Network itself. Just to kind of lay a little background and context. So, as near as I can tell, this group has been a lot of things and done a lot of things over the years, but maybe you can help us kind of further get a handle on sort of the identification and history and what all it's set out to do and what it's done.
Sure. About 1998, I got real sick. I was nearly dead, and when I recovered, I decided to start making a difference in my community, and the dog park movement was starting, so I started that way, and, you know, it was an innocent little project, let's see what we can do, and it kind of blew up into this huge thing, and there were so many people interested in it. At one time, we probably had 45, 50 active members.
And when you say dog park project, what did that really mean?
Off-leash dog parks.
Okay.
In Manatee County.
Just kind of creating one from scratch.
Working with Parks and Recreation.
Uh-huh.
Getting the community leaders to agree to it. It was a pretty new concept back then. Now it's old hat. But
sure.
At that time, it was pretty novel. And
yeah.
Although Sarasota County had one. And I just believed passionately in it and thought it would be good for the animals in the community.
Sure.
And as we're getting petitions, we're at PetSmart getting petitions, and we're talking with people and we're hearing about some problems in the community, particularly animal services, and, you know, the high kill rates going on, and, you know, it just seemed outrageous to us. And so...
Because you had otherwise been sort of just operating outside of the realm of that, so you guys were kind of unaware.
Yes, it was the main focus at that point was getting the dog parks up and running.
Sure.
And that was it. And also, once the dog park started, then we started to start really learning from people, you know.
Right.
What was going on and decisions that were made that were poorly made, or at least in my mind, they were poorly made.
Right.
The advisory board, Animal Service Advisory Board, which is a, you know, a pretty big deal. You're appointed by the county commission. You make recommendations to the county commissioners about policy.
Sure.
It was kind of the old school. I'd go to a couple meetings and, you know, no innovation whatsoever. And I'm like, you know, this really needs to change. So I became a part of that advisory board. I've been in the advisory board now 12 years and was the chair for probably 8 of those.
Wow.
But anyway, the whole thing grew from this small little group of people that were very passionate about not only dogs, but cats and horses and all the animals in our community.
Mm-hmm.
So we just kind of stepped up and tried to do it the right way. We had people saying, you know, let's go picket at Animal Services because they're doing this. And we're like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to infiltrate from the bottom.
And do you feel like, Lori, that your earliest experiences kind of getting the dog park up and running sort of had you know, taught you some valuable lessons about how to...
Oh, absolutely. It taught me valuable lessons about public speaking,
mm-hmm.
Working with county officials.
Yeah.
become a huge part of the animal network.
Right, and how to get things done, I guess, more effectively than just necessarily kind of a rogue protest or whatever.
You must change this immediately.
Right.
We demand changes.
Yeah, people respond really well to that, typically. Yeah, they love that.
Yeah, especially county officials.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a very interesting experience, and now we've got some political clout, and even more so because of the race yesterday. So,
yeah. So, and we'll certainly hope to delve into that in a moment. But what once you got on the board, and you know, obviously some of those or many of those years you were the chair. I mean, what sort of actions or activities did you and your board members kind of help spur or get done that maybe, you know, prior to that time were sort of being ignored or just people weren't even thinking about making those kinds of changes or implementing those policies?
Well, I've got to say at the beginning, nothing really changed very quickly.
Uh-huh.
And I hate to keep bringing up politics, but actually our County Commissioner Carol Whitmore was elected, and she was a real animal lover, and she started becoming involved and really made some changes. An interesting story, we've always wanted a sign on 301 that pointed to our animal services, and we put a sign up and the DOT would take it down and say, you know, we can't have that sign there. So
what was their objection to it?
It was in a right-of-way or something
okay.
ridiculous.
Just but, didn't follow the zoning requirement or something?
And to back up a little bit, no county commissioner have ever even visited animal services.
Hmm.
And I guess just to back up a little bit more, again, one of the things we did do in our movement was request through the county administrator $1 million to build a new shelter there. So that was before Carol got involved. But anyway, she couldn't find her GPS couldn't find it, so she missed the meeting. So I told her about the sign deal, and within 3 weeks we had a sign where we've been wanting to have one for years.
Wow.
To point to where our animal service facility was, because it's kind of in an out-of-the-way area in Palmetto.
Sure. So. Easy to miss, obviously. Yeah.
Yes. So.
Well, so right away
and
you...
And then we've done, you know, different ordinances, you know, like we've got a no tethering ordinance now, you know, animals can't be tethered, chained out, no yard.
Sure.
That was one of our recommendations. We're real big into tag compliance, you know, getting people to buy the county tags year after year,
mm-hmm.
because that produces a lot of revenue. And, you know, people think, oh, that's a tax. Well, it is kind of a tax, but it's a minimal tax. And we do it all together collectively. We bring in about $800,000.
Oh my goodness!
That's about half our budget. So
wow.
You know, I mean, and
also at the same time, it helps. You know, if anybody's animal wanders off or you know,
got it.
Yeah. So it's not just hey, this is a great money making gambit. It's you know, helpful in those moments where somebody does, you know, run out the gate or sneak away or do whatever.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, if right now. Yeah, if a field officer is out and about and sees a dog and they either got a microchip or a county tag, the officers are able to look up in their computer, find where the address is, take the dogs home.
Wow.
Whereas before, they would have to go get impounded. The people have to call and wait, go get them, maybe spend the night there, pay a $100 fine. None of that. The officers just take the dogs home now. So it's real important.
Sure. Well, that sounds, like crucial and again, a great service and a great source of revenue. And so over these dozen years then, Lori, obviously when you started, there were formidable challenges just because nothing really had been done and people didn't, you know where things were even. But how, over that time, how have the challenges kind of maybe shifted as on the one hand you've gotten things done, but sometimes a new set of challenges that you know, you just wouldn't have anticipated kind of crop up in their place.
Well, certainly, and I think probably the biggest change is becoming no-kill community.
Yeah.
And that presents challenges all of its own. And
we've talked about no-kill a number of times on the show, but just for people listening at this moment, maybe you could just sort of briefly describe, you know, really what that means and what that entails.
Okay. It's a movement started by Nathan Winograd. He wrote a book called... oh my gosh, I can't even think of the book name now right now. But anyway, he wrote a book, Redemption.
Okay.
About the no-kill movement, and he started it in San Francisco, and he's got 11 points, and you'd have to read the book because I can't go through them all now.
Sure, of course.
But one of the big points is getting animals out to the people.
Right. The basic goal, obviously, is to reduce vastly, dramatically,
exactly,
the number of animals that are being euthanized in a given shelter.
All adoptable animals.
Yeah.
You know, not aggressive animals, not sick animals, not elderly or disturbed animals. But the healthy animals, there's homes for healthy animals.
Sure.
You just have to get them to the people. That is a big challenge, and off-site adoptions is one of the big factors in no-kill.
Sure.
And that's one of our big problems right now is getting the volunteers, getting a transportation to these events, getting them coordinated. You need a lot of volunteers and somebody to coordinate those volunteers, and that's tricky.
Yeah.
So our numbers fluctuate. You know, we may have what they call a live release rate of 84% 1 month. That means 84% of the animals were all adopted,
mm-hmm,
or transferred into rescues or shelters, other shelters.
Sure.
And the next month you might have a 64 live release rate.
Yeah.
And that's very frustrating, but that's just part of the challenges of becoming no kill, and it's going to take some time.
Right.
It's going to take well coordinated effect for animal services to get there, and I applaud them because it's not easy.
Well, yeah, it's a fundamental change to the operation and the culture and everything else. So
yeah,
it typically does take time, and there are sort of, you know, ups and downs, as you've kind of articulated here, that before you kind of get on a more even plane. But
you also have to get the cooperation of all the other shelters and
sure,
and rescues, a real commitment, and the Humane Society's come on board lately, and they're willing to adopt the funds for animal services, which is such a unique thing for another shelter to want to help another shelter find homes. It's fabulous.
That's a great sense of cooperation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very
cool. And community.
For sure. Well, this is Talking Animals. We're speaking with Lori Crawford, president of the Animal Network, in a conversation recorded last Wednesday. So speaking of that, those two working together, I mean, to what extent does the Animal Network serve as a kind of unifying force or nexus generally for rescues and other animal organizations in Manatee County?
Well, that's a great question. That's not been a very easy thing to do as well.
Yeah.
Because everybody has their different, you know, bylaws or the way they want to do things, or I'm the leader of this, and I'm the leader of this, and and we're no kill, and we're no kill. Well, that's all good, well and good, but if you're refusing to take animals and send them to the kill shelter, you're not doing your part.
Yeah.
So, you know, at first we started the Manatee Animal Coalition. We called it. It was a group with us and Bishop and Humane Society and Animal Services and a couple other organizations, just kind of brainstorming how we could work together. And the Animal Network kind of spearheaded those meetings to get the cooperation. And that coalition now has morphed into a coalition that includes anybody that's interested in animal issues or any rescue, foster, one-person operations to, you know, 10 people operations, you know. It's open. It's a forum for everybody to come. We do that every 3 months, and we just kind of get together and brainstorm ideas. And I think it goes back to what I said originally. We went to animal services, and we were polite. We were kind, and we were also provided financial help. We bought the first washer and dryer at animal services. We helped paint the facility. It was a dark prison gray. We painted it to be a nice, pleasant blue. We just encouraged people to talk. We wrote letters to the editor. We met with the county administrator, which was really foreign to me.
Yeah.
But in that first meeting with the county administrator, I was talking about tag compliance and revenue, and I was telling him that, you know, we bring in so much money for with these tags. We want to really have a free spay and neuter program here. Well, in that one conversation, he went from 30,000 to 60,000 for free spays and neuters in Manatee County.
You mean the budget allocated for...
Exactly.
Wow.
And that stayed till this day, and that's been about 10 years. And so we still are so fortunate. I get calls from all over. I need a free spay neuter. I need a free spay neuter. Well, if you live in Sarasota County, you're out of luck. You live in DeSoto, you're out of luck. Live in Charlotte County, you're out of luck. But if you're in Manatee County and you're on food stamps or Social Security or free lunch, you can take two pets per year and get them spayed and neutered for absolutely nothing. You only have to pay for the county tag.
Wow.
That's... So those are some of the inside things, and a lot of people don't even know about these things, and that's fine. We like to kind of fly under the radar. We don't need a lot of, you know, hype or thanks or
sure.
atta girls, you know.
I mean, right.
We just do it because we're passionate about it.
And so obviously you're you know the president and you know sort of spearheading all these kinds of things. How many other people are sort of part of the Animal Network, at least in terms of leadership and getting some of these things done?
Well, we don't really have a specific organization. We don't have dues or
yeah. Yeah.
We don't have a newsletter. We don't have anything like that. So it's,
yeah.
it's really a small group of us.
Right.
I'd say probably 12 active members,
okay.
believe it or not.
Yeah.
But like I said, we've drawn in, you know, Carol Whitmore, Commissioner Whitmore. She's just right involved in day-to-day operations with nothing for me to call her, you know, on a daily basis and tell
sure.
her what I think about certain things. And
yeah, because, I mean... Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that in sort of, you know, preparing to interview you today, you know, and really trying to delve into the Animal Network, and then in fact you and I had kind of an email exchange about this, is it seemed like, the Animal Network is kind of, amorphous in the way that it sort of does a number of things and kind of, what those things are varies at least as near as I could tell just by sort of what's needed most at that moment or even sort of, you know, over the years that you guys have been around, what has been needed to be done, you know, at that year or at that moment in, you know, 5 years ago or 3 years ago. Because, you know, I think in that same email exchange, you described the Animal Network as primarily a lobbying group, yet, you know, you've certainly done a lot of other things, and you know, maybe you could just sort of expand on you know that's your definition of the Animal Network, and that it is primarily a lobbying group. Because again, you could look at it and say, well, actually, it does this and it's done that, and there's a number of kind of hats that it seems to wear.
Yeah, that's a great observation, by the way, and that really is true. And one of the things we do is, I'll just give you an example. I was talking with the marketing director of the Childs Group last October. She does the marketing for Sandbar, Beach House, Mar Vista.
Mm-hmm.
Even people in Tampa know about those restaurants right on the beach. Fabulous. But she had seen a CBS News this morning about shelter dogs being photographed by professional photographers.
Mm-hmm.
And these dogs all of a sudden started getting adopted because the pictures were so beautiful, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You have a dog, a dachshund on Pet Finders for 4 months. Professional photographer puts a pair of string of pearls around the neck of the dachshund and puts it in an elegant chair, and there's 5 calls for it the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Karen said to me, you know, I don't want to start this program, but I do know a lot of professional photographers because of the weddings. The destination weddings at the Sandbar.
Sure.
And I said, well, Karen, I'll tell you one thing right now. Good luck. If you want to do it, you're just going to have to pick it up and do it yourself. And she started this program called Picture Them Adopted, PTA.
Mm-hmm.
She now has a rotation that professional photographers go to animal services every week and take pictures of the dogs and cats and gets them posted on our website and on Pet Finders. And that's just a fabulous, fabulous program. But that's the thing about the Animal Network. We're a group of leaders.
Yeah, what needs
you
to get done.
You take your own passion and you go with it.
Right.
We'll provide you with some financial help.
Yeah.
We'll give you our experience. We'll provide the people you need to talk to.
Resources, yeah.
Exactly, resource, mm-hmm. perfect word for it. And you just go with it.
Sure. And is there any way to quantify, like, say, for example, before the Picture Them Adopted started, I mean, you'd say, yeah, somebody would sit on pet finders for a long time, but, I mean, is there any way to really quantify just some kind of form of statistics, what happened to the adoptions once the Picture Them Adopted program kind of kicked in and you know, after a period of time?
I don't think so.
Yeah. But obviously, I guess you guys just know anecdotally that it's just helped tremendously. Yeah.
And of course, with the, well, I talked about the live release rates.
Yeah.
You know, that's certainly part of it.
Right. So a lot of these things all kind of serve each other in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's cooperation, you know.
Right. Now, one of the things you just mentioned, Lori, is that if somebody needs some help or resources, there might be some, of course, guidance and leadership experience, but also some funds. And so I take it part of what the Animal Network does or does to help, you know, come up with those funds is mounting events and fundraisers. You know, obviously one of the things we're talking about today is the major event coming up Saturday, the aforementioned Canine Christmas Festival. So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, this is the 14th one, I believe. So seems like it's pretty sprawling, fun, colorful event. Maybe you could give us a little bit of the lowdown of what all goes on. And where?
It's a great event, and I'm not just saying that because it's my event. Everybody says it.
Yeah.
It is so fun. And we started this event because we were kind of waiting around for the dog parks to start. We didn't have anything to do. So what the primary goal for Canine Christmas was to show what great pets you can get at the shelters.
Mm-hmm.
This was before shelter pets got popular.
Okay, yeah.
It got cruel, you
know? Yeah,
yeah. So I remember the first year I was adamant. The fashion show can only be adopted, rescued, or special need dogs. And, you know, we had the Pomeranian owners and the Maltese owners and the poodle owners were so mad because why can't we have our dogs in the fashion show?
Sure.
Well, that's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is to let the audience see what great dogs are out there.
Right.
Now, a lot of people don't like dressing up dogs. And my last dog, I wouldn't dress up, but this one, she likes to dress up, so it's all cool.
Sure. It's dog by dog. Yeah.
It is dog by dog. I love that. That's great. And if we have a talent show at 11:30 called American Fido.
Okay, before we get into some more details, let's run down the key elements, which are that it's Saturday. It's this coming Saturday, November 17th. From 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and it's at the Bishop SPCA Animal Shelter Grounds.
Correct.
And that's 5718 21st Avenue West in Bradenton. So that's one thing. And, again, people who want to find out more beyond what we'll talk about a bit more, of course, momentarily here, there's a great website devoted strictly to it, caninechristmas.com. So, okay, so you've touched on a couple things. Let's find out if some of the other things, because, yeah, it's jam-packed. It seems like full of cool shows, events, contests, and more. So.
Yeah, it's getting really big, too. I mean, we outgrew our last venue. Now we won't move from this because the venue is so beautiful. We're at Bishop. It's 40 acres. And,
yeah.
And to just let people know that the proceeds go to Animal Network, not Bishop.
Uh-huh, okay.
But it's great. It's a great, for Bishop as well, great exposure for them.
Sure.
And,
Well, let's talk, before we, because we're probably sort of nearing the end of our time, Lori, so we want to be sure to talk about, the Guinness, the attempt by, this, Canine Christmas Festival to set a new Guinness record. So talk a little bit about it and what it involves, and including, I guess, the history, at least, of trying it last year, if not prior to that.
Right. Well, we tried it last year, and I'm sure we broke the record, or set the record, I should say.
Okay.
But I couldn't document it.
And what is just for people listening who may not have heard about this, what is the record that you're trying to set?
Well, there is no record. So the Guinness has said we have to have over 100 dogs.
And right, but you're trying to get them to all those dogs to do sit-stay, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Just long enough for a photograph to be taken.
Right. And so
last year I could count 89.
Okay.
So we're 11 short. And then we're also doing a boot camp, sit-stay boot camp at Bishop.
Oh, okay.
Well, of course, that's past now. But,
right.
You know, a couple Saturdays so people could go brush up on their skills. And,
sure.
And
who can,
with their dogs.
Who can participate? Sounds like you've already got probably a lot of folks, especially from last year, who said, hey, we're gonna set this record no matter what happens.
Well, we need as many reliable sit stayers as we can get.
Yeah.
If we have 200 sit stayers, that's even better. Now, the first 120 get a bandana, free bandana that says, I came, I sat, I stayed.
Great, great.
And they have to sign in and
I may come over just for the bandana, but
oh well, cool. So, I'll save one for you. Yeah. But I'd love to have you there.
But so how is this? So it sounds like just a photograph. I guess you guys get a broad enough photo or some sort of aerial view, and that documents. Yeah. Okay. And then you guys submit that to the Guinness folks, and then they say, okay, yes, you actually.
Well, I didn't even submit it last year.
No, but that's what would happen this year.
That's what we're hoping will happen this year.
Great.
And I wanted to mention our judges on the fashion show.
Okay.
We've got some real celebrity judges, so I want people to know about it.
Sure.
We've got Ed Brodsky, the state attorney, Carol Whitmore.
Okay.
Todd Lewecki, who is the CEO of the Lightning.
Okay.
Lightning's also donating $1,000 to Canine Christmas.
Wow.
I know. And Haley Wilgus from Channel 7, our local station, the anchor.
Great.
And he's not really a celebrity. He's a celebrity to me, my veterinarian, Dr. Berglund.
Oh, good. Great. Yeah. Well, that's a nice crew, a nice mix of folks.
It's a hard decision.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know my dog's going to be Princess Beatrice, so.
All right. Well, there you go. Well, Lori, we're probably just about out of time now, but let's just review again just because, again, it's Canine Christmas Festival this Saturday, November 17th. From 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And again, there's a talent show. I don't think we even talked about. There's raffle drawings. There's all kinds of a silent auction. Just so many things. And of course, the Guinness Record Sit Stay Challenge that, you know, people really want to get involved with. That happens at 3:30. And, of course, you can find out more about this and other things by going to the website specifically for the festival at canine.com. So, well, we'll wish everybody luck for both a successful event and a new world record. And we've been speaking with Lori Crawford from the Animal Network Inc. And again, their website is animalnetworkinc.com. So, Lori, well, great speaking with you, and we hope it's a smash success. And thanks for all your great work over the years for all our animal friends.
Well, it's been an honor to speak with you, Duncan.
Well, thank you very much. Take care. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member to win, and there'll be a prize, a copy of Kathy Unruh's Taming Me, Memoir of a Clever Island Cat, to the first person who emails the correct title of this animal tune to Duncan at WMNF.org. It's named an animal tune on Talking Animals.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
All right, can you name that animal tune? I'm sure you can. If so, again, email Duncan at WMNF.org. The first person who does so will get a copy of the book. All right, let's hear, before we're going to wrap things up, let's hear one more. animal tune, a bonus animal tune for today. This is the head and the heart with cats and dogs here on Talking Animals.
Somewhere underneath the floorboard, I will sweep my garden. Underneath the cupboard lives a mouse, and he discovered there was nothing there. Nothing there, to discover.
Right. The head and the heart with cats and dogs. We're in the final moments of Talking Animals. But I want to have a couple other news items that we didn't get to, including something that was part of the Hurricane Sandy aftermath that wouldn't necessarily have thought about or expected. Hurricane Sandy's exacted a heavy toll on New York City, claiming lives, plunging hundreds of thousands of homes into darkness and devastating small businesses. The damage extended to Brooklyn Grange Bees, New York City's first commercial apiary, located at the historic Brooklyn Navy Yard across from Brooklyn Grange Rooftop Farm, the largest soil rooftop farm in the world. 18 hives located on a pier estimated between 40 and 50,000 bees per colony perished. One colony on the ground named Hurricane Hive survived. In addition to selling honey and beeswax, the apiary was engaged in a queen bee breeding program with the goal of ultimately supplying the New York City beekeeping community with local bees. Nine of the hives in the program are located in three different rooftop locations and survived. The apiary intends to continue with the program in 2013. And some information from Special Projects Director and Chief Beekeeper Brooklyn Grange, Chase Emmons. The farms weathered the storm very well. Some irrigation blew around, but the farms themselves are very resilient. Our weighted down hives on the roofs survived as well. Spent several days securing anything on the roofs that could blow around and clearing drains of any debris. Luckily, our wind-sensitive crops were mostly done, like tomatoes and such. Since the projections were that flood would not be an issue even on the pier, we secured the hives there with ratchet straps onto pallets, which had weights on them. We were actually most nervous about gust winds down there. The rooftop hives have parapets to blunt some of the wind. Monday morning, after the first high tide hit and the projections were starting to hedge about the evening storm surge, we were able to get one person into the Navy Yard. High water from the morning tide was still well below the hives, and even if the evening exceeded projections by another foot, we would have been okay. Evening storm surge exceeded projections by many feet. Shoulder weight, shoulder height at the hives. So they're going to continue their efforts and sort of rebuild. And it's just one of those things that you just don't have occasion to think about in the wake of something like Hurricane Sandy, even if you are concerned, as we are, of course, here at the show and the listeners, about the impact on animals and their humans. So I just wanted to include that. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals, though, on the WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, November 21st, with another edition of the show. I hope you'll join us then. I also hope you visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page or Twitter feed and more. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and you can like both the show, Talking Animals Radio Show is how it's listed, or us personally on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. It's all found through links at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals Broadcast Outreach Consultant is Libby Basalis. My thanks as always to her. I'm Duncan Stress. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the wonderful Scott Elliott and the All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. We're closing out today's show with an animal song, sort of. This is new music from Neil Young and Crazy Horse, with High Flying Bird taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening, and speak with you again next week at 11 a.m. right here on Talking Animals. Thanks.
There's a high flying bird way up in the sky, and I wonder, does she look down that she flies on by? It's floating. Like a tree here, I got them sit down and fly. Oh, I'm gonna die blue, gonna die. Well, the sun comes along and she lights up the day, and then when she gets tired, to the west, she goes down every day. But look out, I'm just rooted like a tree. Worked in a mine.